Welcome to Partnering with Parents, brought to you by the Classical Academies. Join us every other Tuesday as we educate, encourage, and support parents in their role as the primary educator.
I'm Cameron Curry, the CEO for the Classical Academies, and it's time for another podcast. Today, we are so fortunate to have Nina Reese, the President and Chief Executive Officer for the National Alliance of Public Charter Schools, the leading national nonprofit organization committed to advancing the charter school movement, with us today. So welcome to the program, Nina.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Nina, for those who may be listening who don't know a lot about you, give us a little snapshot.
Oh, well, thanks again for having me, Cameron. I was born and raised in Iran, left Iran in 1983 after the revolution, and my father was a Fulbright scholar who was educated in the U.S., so he was fortunate enough to have had a good friend who offered him a job as a visiting professor at Virginia Tech, which is a small town in the rural community of Southwest Virginia. And okay. So of all places, we moved from Tehran to Blacksburg when I was in high school, and went to high school and eventually to college in Southwest Virginia. And when eventually I moved to DC, I was very interested in working in politics and policy, and the people that I ended up working with, fortunately, were very interested in expanding educational opportunities and options, especially for low-income families. And as I reflect back on one of the reasons I have an affinity to this cause, my kind of 2 years in high school, certainly, and the experience that my parents had in, you know, moving us from Iran to the U.S. certainly is part of the reason I'm dedicated to the cause. I think their journey, even though vastly different from those of a lot of our families, is the same as the journey that a lot of the families who are sending their children to charter schools are going through. And regardless of whether you're rich or poor or were born here or not, every parent wants what's best for their kids. And that is one of the reasons why I wake up every day and I love what I do, because with choice, with charter schools in particular, you can access a public school of choice for free without admission standards and criteria, without having to pay a tuition. And so if people are interested in expanding educational options to a high quality public school, the best bet to this day is by expanding options to charter schools.
I love that, how you've taken your personal story and related it to the work that you're involved in right now. That is just awesome. How long have you actually been at the National Alliance?
I am coming up on my 10th year. I just celebrated my 9 year, believe it or not. I remember meeting you or talking to you when I first taken the job. And, my daughter is now 16, so she was much younger, and now that I'm helping her think about college, you're also reminded of how fast time goes by, and when you're having fun, certainly. And so I'm coming up on my 10th year.
Well, congratulations. That's great. So what are the current charter school myths that the National Alliance is actually trying to change the dialogue on right now?
Oh my gosh, one of the things I like to remind people of is when I started working in this movement in the mid-90s, charter schools were new to the scene. And I would say the vast majority of the things that our opposition were saying back then remain true today. So the fact that they are not public, the fact that a lot of people are still confused about the public nature of charter schools is one of those myths that we are continuing to bust, and certainly our opposition has leveraged over time. The fact that they are open to everyone, that they don't have admission standards. The other myth is that they're not accountable, that they're not raising student achievement, and that, in some communities, they're seen as an engine to resegregate public schools. So again, these are all myths. When you look in the aggregate at the national level, charter schools have played a key role in expanding educational options to so many families. And in many communities, like the one that I'm in, the Washington, D.C. area, they have been one of the key engines to keep new parents in the city and making sure that the students, the schools are more diverse than they would have been had you not had charter schools in place. And so they do reflect the makeup of their community, though. So for us, it's, you know, those who don't support us are going to continue talking about the myths. But
right.
I would say the key myth that we still unfortunately have to debunk is the fact that we are public and that we are in this to elevate the quality of public education and to reinvigorate public education, bring it back to those ideals that were front and center when the Common School ideal was initially conceptualized.
Well, I completely agree with you. It is amazing to me, coming up on our 30th anniversary here with charter schools in California, still the public doesn't understand we're not a private school. And it's like, no. And I like to just kind of describe it as we are a public school that gets to chart their own course with a charter, and then we're accountable to a local school district or a local authority. But it is true that the myth remains, and still lots of confusion all these years in with the general public about what we do, who we serve, and that we are public. It's interesting. It's totally interesting. So what do you see on the horizon for charter schools?
Well, there's so much going on. I would say the past 18, 20 months have actually reinvigorated the movement. When you think back on your school and what your experience certainly is one that I think about. You know, most charter leaders, when the pandemic first hit, were confronted with a lot of the challenges that everyone else faced. But because our leaders are entrepreneurial and they have a degree of autonomy and freedom, flexibility in exchange for being held accountable for outcomes and their schools of choice, they were able to really pivot very quickly to offering remote learning, whether it was through online means or by creating grab and go packs and making sure they were making course content available to their kids. So the initial reaction of the charter school sector was one that we're extremely proud of, and the reason why so many of us want to double down on this governance model. We were able to correct a lot of the things that this traditional school district was unable to self-correct when the pandemic first hit. And normally, you know, look, when you have economies of scale and structures in place, as a lot of school districts have in place, you can make a lot of things happen quickly, correct? So, mm-hmm. But in our case, a lot of school districts were not able to do these things quickly because of the labor union contracts with the teachers unions, and also the fact that they're such bureaucratic and regulatory driven engines that they spent a lot of time thinking through these processes and boxes they needed to check rather than to think about the customers they needed to serve to be able to do things faster. So that's unfortunate, and it's not something that, you know, we talk about enough, but I do think the contrast is a pretty stark one, and one that needs to be discussed in both, you know, academic circles, but also in pragmatic discussions with school districts. And what is it about what you did that didn't work? Because this could happen again. And in many ways, the new normal that we're in necessitates that we give our school districts, the people running our schools, more autonomy and flexibility so that they are able to respond to threats such as the pandemic and whatever else that may come next much faster. So that was definitely a story of success. The other thing that happened is a new report that we just released demonstrates is the number of families who ended up opting into charter schools was at an all-time high. We had about 240,000 students in 42 states that decided to enroll in a charter school.
That's awesome.
That number is even higher if you, you know, Tennessee, we haven't been able to get data from the state of Tennessee, but Tennessee is a robust state when it comes to charter schools. And so that number is probably even higher than 240 I mentioned. So the numbers also went up when the overall numbers in the district-run schools went down by about 1.3 million. We'd like to say that by having families opt into charter schools, that we were able to keep about 250,000 students in the public system, whereas a lot of other families opted to pull them out and put them in a private setting or in a homeschool setting. So again, last fall, the story of charters and what happened in our schools is a very positive one. In terms of what's on the horizon, oh, the other thing I should also highlight, Cameron, is that, you know, as far as momentum is concerned at the state level, we saw more victories last year in state legislatures and in thanks to a lot of governors who are pro-charter governors than we've ever seen in every state where there was, a legislature in place that was open to doing things that benefited charter schools. Something positive happened in some instances, like Ohio. It ranged from expanding options beyond just inner cities. So now you can open a charter school anywhere in Ohio. They also increased the per pupil allocation for high performing charter schools by a good bit. They also opened or created more funding for charters to access facilities finance. In California, you were able to keep bad things from happening. So in those places where you didn't have a lot of momentum potentially up until recently, you were also able to hold the line and protect the sector. So we saw movement in just about every single state around the country, and we think a lot of these states are poised to do even more next year. And at the federal level, as you've seen in the news, and you're probably the beneficiary of these funds, there has been a lot of funding available from the federal government to mitigate all the risks of reopening schools safely. And, you know, our sort of charge to our leaders and everyone is to just make sure that we are chronicling what we're doing and how we're spending the money, because I'm willing to bet that we are more effective at spending these dollars judiciously and probably doing more innovative things with this extra cash than a lot of other people maybe in our district run schools are doing. So the story so far has been a positive one. And I think on the horizon, at least the immediate horizon, we see a lot of momentum, both by legislatures to do good things, but I also think families are going to continue to seek more options. And for the first time, you know, in many respects, a lot of families who may not have been thinking about options had exercised some sort of, you know, authority to move their kid to another school because they were not happy with what they were getting in the district run system. And so what that means eventually and what it means for public education as we know it remains to be seen. But I think in those places where the charter option is a viable one, we will likely see more of an interest in opening the door and serving more families.
Well, I loved you detailing some of the highlights from across the United States regarding legislatures and governors that are really elevating what's best for kids and let's create more options and more opportunities. And how do we really empower, you know, our charter public schools to do more great work for students? And that just gets me excited because I know living here in California over the past with Mr. Newsom's time as our governor has really been a challenge for charter public schools. And it was interesting during the pandemic when, to your own description, so many of the local school districts didn't know what to do. And in San Diego Unified alone, they waited 7 weeks before they ever engaged with their teachers, ever engaged with the community, while the charters in the area, within just a few days, pivoted, offered new content, offered grading, and offered daily connection with a credentialed teacher. So the model was working very successfully, I know, in our region here in the San Diego area. However, the governor and the legislature really just said, you know what, we're not going to fund the schools where the kids actually retreated to, where they were actually getting a great education and access to content, grading, and teachers. They actually decided to fund the programs where those kids actually left, which then caused the classical academies and a couple of other charter schools to actually sue the state to actually recover that funding. And that suit is still moving through the courts at this point. So we're hopeful that the court system will definitely right the wrong. But I love the fact that charters are available. Charters are doing great things for kids. And thank you for providing our audience with really a nice slice of, it's not this way everywhere. So, you know, there is hope for parents across the United States that options and opportunities are still available. And there are still people in elected officials still making great decisions for what's in the best interest of students. So thank you for sharing that with us. That brings me hope.
Of course. And, you know, it's really thanks to leaders like you. And I think, you know, you represent the spirit behind the movement on so many levels. So, grateful that we have individuals like you who are
Thank you.
interested in this work. Thank you.
It's important. It's totally important. So Nina, talk to us about, is there an importance of having parents involved in this work, and how can they be a voice for great schools in their communities?
Absolutely. I mean, this thing only works if parents are engaged, and in many ways, you know, the act of opting to enroll your child into a school, you know, indicates that they are interested in their kids' education. But we also need to make sure they remain engaged in advocacy. And often, and I would say up until recently, in many cases, we haven't needed our families to be that engaged in politics and in talking about charter schools and being surrogates for the movement. But increasingly, we are noticing that, first of all, they are the best people to talk about why a charter school is a school that that needs to be in place, because they have themselves enrolled their children in those schools. But also, there are more families enrolled whose kids are enrolled in charter schools than we now have teachers around the country. So a lot of times when people look at the sector in the aggregate, they wonder what could happen in order to get all the families who are enrolling their kids in charter schools to become vocal supporters for their schools and for high quality public school options. I think it's incumbent on every school leader to engage their families at every level to make sure that they understand that the opportunity to attend a charter school is something that could be taken away if we're not taking care of it. You don't want to wait until something bad happens to mobilize those families. So if you are offering a high quality option and you are, you know, creating beacons of hope and opportunity for families and their kids, then chances are those families are going to want to come and advocate for you. And we need to make sure that we are training them and staying in touch with them in ways that make sense. You know, can't just constantly do a fire drills to prepare them, but you do need to make sure that you are engaging them properly in understanding that the school that they're sending their kids to is a public school of choice, but also one that could go away if politicians are not advocating on their behalf.
Duly informed, exactly. Absolutely. And have you found in your tenure with the National Alliance, it's been rather interesting how the charter school movement was really the darling, I think, of one party and then of both parties. And it seems now that under the current administration, do we sense that charter schools are on the out, or are we kind of halfway into the door, or are we, favored, just from a national perspective?
Well, look, I think we have huge momentum behind us, and that we are definitely the education reform that has, you know, longest run, I guess, when you compare it to other ed reforms out there. You know, the days when charter schools were talked about by President Bill Clinton and President Obama are certainly those years where the movement thinks of when they think about politicians supporting them. But I also will say that, look, there are so many other things out there like Head Start, and people are not talking about Head Start on a daily basis, and President Biden is not walking around talking about Head Start. But Head Start is here to stay, even though it was created a long time ago, and there are a lot of politicians in both the House and the Senate who support it. So rather than to think about the movement as something that needs one powerful person at the top to constantly talk about it, I think one of the things we need to become better at, and I think the sector has made a lot of progress in this regard, is by getting to know their members of Congress and all the lawmakers who represent the schools in which we operate, so that you have multiple elected officials on any given day aware of the contributions that the school is making, not just to the families they serve, but also to the community that they serve, the teachers, the number of teachers who are hired, number of vendors who are hired by the school. So I think we need to start to think about this in terms of the long run and what you need to do in order to create political muscle for the future will entail paying attention to politicians at every level of government, but it's best to start with those at the very bottom who are closest to you. So mm-hmm. the mayors and the council members and school board members, state legislators, governors, and then elected officials at the federal level. I do think we need to pay attention at all levels of government and not just focus on, you know, the presidency. As far as President Biden is concerned, though, he did put money in his budget to support the growth of charter schools. So that is a very positive sign. Good. He comes from a state that boasts a high number of charter schools in all parts of the state. This is not just the state that opened charter schools in one community. You have a variety of schools that cater to very different communities and are very diverse in many respects. Both senators from Delaware and the sole representative who represents the state are charter school supporters. So his own state, you know, has a lot going for it. And in that respect, he himself also, he's never been involved in education issues, but he has had exposure to the charter school sector, certainly when he was vice president, and also when he was in the Senate as someone who supported all the different laws that supported charter schools. So I think because of COVID and because of all the other issues that presidents deal with at the right. federal level, the focus is on other things right now. So I'm confident that this issue will remain at the forefront of what we do at the national level, but you know, there are also other issues that presidents cover. And usually at times of chaos and pandemics and wars, education, unfortunately, doesn't register as a top issue.
Right.
And I think that's probably what we're dealing with more than anything else right now.
Well, and to your point, it's really important for parents to advocate for their schools, for leaders to keep their communities informed with what the issues are. And to your point again, if we're not doing that on a consistent basis, then the opportunities we have today may not be here tomorrow. And
I
love to tell communities as well with the different charter schools that are in San Diego County is the fact that we have to tell our stories well. We have to know what we're doing for kids. We've got to be able to elevate those stories of success and hopefully capture people's attention. Because at the end of the day, if you're not doing great things for kids, you have to ask yourself, are you just... You know, what are you really trying to do if you're not doing great things for kids every day? So, Nina, for people who'd like to get more information about the National Alliance, where are they going to find that information?
Well, our website, publiccharters.org, has all of the information that one could need about, you know, what charter schools are, what we do at the National Alliance, and ways to support us, whether it's through advocacy or by just being a supporter of our cause. We also have a national conference that you're kind enough to attend every year. Hopefully next year it will be in person.
Fingers crossed.
Supposed to be in Washington, D.C. So we also encourage folks to register and attend the conference. Even if it's virtual, it's a good way to meet others in the community and, you know, get up to speed with the latest trends and issues that confront our space.
And be encouraged with all the great work happening.
Yeah. Publiccharters.org. And that has all the information you need.
Well, wonderful, Nina. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Cameron.
Partnering with Parents is brought to you by the Classical Academies, a group of award-winning public charter schools serving over 4,500 students in Southern California. Suggest a future episode or advertise with us by visiting classicalacademy.com/podcast. Consider subscribing to our channel, leaving us a review, and supporting our Patreon page. Thanks for listening.